Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Manic Candace podcast. It's your girl Candace, back at it again with a brand new episode of the podcast. And today, this morning, this evening, this afternoon, this very good night, whenever and wherever you are listening, my friends, mes and mes, we are going to discuss something that 43 million U.S. citizens have been ignoring. And that's student loans. I have student loan debt. Me and collectively 43 million others in the United States are student loan borrowers. Some of us have borrowed student loans as far back as the 1990s. And as of today, May 14th, 2025, the United States total student loan debt is $1.777 trillion. And that is across approximately 43 million borrowers. 4 million of those 43 million borrowers owe over $100,000 in student loan debt. Now, there are a lot of issues surrounding the predatory nature of student loan debt, who those loans target, and why that is very predatory. We're going to talk about the lack of accountability being taken on repaying these loans, and how coming to that realization is difficult. And we're going to talk about it. How a whole generation of people feel cheated and feel tricked that they had to go to college by all means, and the American dream, and how that worked out for those people today. I'm talking about millennials. And we'll talk about just, you know, how to do it. You know, no one wants to open that conversation of how to pay back your loans, your student loans. So let me just give you a brief history of my own student loan journey. I was 17, and a few months prior to my 17th birthday, I was applying for colleges. And I believe that winter of when I turned 17, I was accepted into Arizona State University. And I was so excited. My whole life, I've been pulled to the side by cousins, by my mother's cousins, people who were older relatives. They told me over and over again throughout my life, where are you going to go to school? For college? You have to go to college. Are you going to college? You plan on going to college, right? My mom was the first one in the entire family. I'm talking immediate, extended, everything. She was the first one to go to college, a university, and graduate and have a degree, have a good job with the salary and benefits. My family came from poverty. My mother was born into poverty. I wasn't, because she was a badass and decided to get herself out of poverty and then had me when she was in a better position in life. And I could, like, I am so thankful for that tenacity that has been passed down to me. I have that same drive that my mother has. And I purposefully have not made a family my priority or have brought in kids into this world, because I'm not where I want to be or where my mom was when she was raising me. And I have had a level of comfort that I've grown to realize was financed by my mother's hard work in college. So I always knew that, like, college was important. I always knew that college was a gateway, a way out of poverty. But that was true for my mother's generation, not necessarily mine. My mom is 22 years older than me, so it's a good gap. She is Gen X, and I am millennial. I am a millennial. And when she was the age that I was when I was applying for schools, she had scholarships and she had a few loans that were forgiven eventually because she worked in public service. She was a federal officer for 28 years. So she had her loans forgiven. So she didn't deal with student loan debt and she didn't really have experience in dealing with it. So, and also coming from a poverty set like area, she came from the reservation in New Mexico. To come from a poverty-stricken area and to achieve something like a college degree outside of your reservation, that is huge. And I applaud her for that. But there's a lot of things she didn't experience because she didn't have student loan debt. So there was a lot of things she couldn't counsel me on because she didn't have that experience. And even though she didn't have that experience, like nothing was taught to her as far as like how to play the financial system, how to play the game, how to invest, how to do all this stuff, you know, like the American way. If you're an immigrant or if you're a minority or you're not white or you're not rich, you know what I'm talking about. That knowledge, that vital knowledge that was shut from us on how to build credit, how to manage debt, how to like, you know, save money, how to spend it, what to spend it on, what to look out for in the future, and what companies to invest in, and like, what does it mean to invest? What liquidation means, like what all this stuff means. And it's funny because I got all the way up to Vanguard, one of the top hedge funds in the world, and the people who were running it didn't even know what the S&P 500 is. So a lot of this information regarding how to be savvy with your finances was not available, not only to me, it wasn't available. It wasn't available to my peers. So there's an issue right there, is a lack of financial literacy and a lack of teaching it in public schools where it's needed. One semester of economics when you're a sophomore or a senior, an advanced sophomore or a senior, one semester in economics is not enough. Okay, we should have been taught economics since eighth grade. It should have been a class. Maybe we could cut out band and art for things that really matter. I'm sorry, I know the arts matter, but it's like, damn. What's better, a painting or financial literacy? What's better, being recognized as an artist or having all your debt paid? Things are kind of like weighing equally here, you know? So I felt like, me personally, I felt like I had no choice but to go to college. It wasn't only people in my family telling me to go. It was society. It was my teachers encouraging me to go to college because I had good grades. It was the colleges themselves telling us to go. There were a lot of like movies and sitcoms and episodes of things that portrayed going to college as a prerequisite to a good life. And what does a good life mean? A job that could afford you a home and a car and a family. Because that was true for Generation X. They achieved that. Come hell or high water, come 2008, they still achieved that. Even if they lost their home, they still had the opportunity to buy one. My generation doesn't have that. I think millennials are barely starting to make $1,000 to $1,500 a week. Barely. A lot of us have climbed out of the median range of $33,000 a year that most of us were in. I think there's been a great divide in millennials of those who are going to be subject to the statistics or those who are going to be outliers and rise above it. I'm an outlier. I'm going to do everything I can to make myself an outlier of the statistics about millennials and how they can't own things. Like, I will be a homeowner, come hell or high water. I will be. Even if it's in my 40s, I don't care. My mom bought her second house when she was 40-something. There's no rush on buying a home. There's no rush. Yeah, it sucks that your grandparents did it in their early 20s, but they didn't have all the expensive things. They didn't have the inflation. They had to buy the same things, but they were at a lower rate. And we won't get into that. Because we know how good the boomers had it. And how good they still have it. And me personally, I think they're selfish not selling their homes to millennials and selling it to hedge funds when they don't have that much time on earth to enjoy all that money. They better pass it down. That's all I'm saying. Because for a lot of us millennials, our only hope to achieving financial freedom is when grandma, grandpa, dad, mom, somebody with a life insurance policy or somebody that has left you something in their name, in your name, for them to die and for you to get your money. For a while, before my mom retired, I was like, I have to make sure I'm the beneficiary on everything she owns. Every form of income. I had to make sure I was listed as the beneficiary. Because that's the only chance right now, except this podcast blowing up. I asked ChatGPT what my odds are of being a millionaire based on my hobbies. And he said that. ChatGPT said that. The biggest chance for you to become a millionaire is through your podcast. So I'm like, all right. So here I am making no money off my podcast, but hoping all this investment will pay off. When I say investment, I mean time recording, time without a crew or editing squad or like not being on YouTube. Like it's all going to pay off one day, but I'm still grinding. It's going to be 4 years in September. I just want to say thank you for listening to me. I have kept an audience of about 50% male and female, give or take the 1 or 2% of unspecified gender. A lot of you, a good chunk of you are in your 40s, your mid-30s to your mid-40s, and I can't be more grateful to have, you know, people with wisdom listen to me. Some of you have reached out and said and have said that I make you laugh and I crack you up and that you're getting your entire life, quote unquote, listening to my podcast. And I just want to say thank you. I really, really, really appreciate it. And I look forward to every opportunity I have to connect with you through a Instagram comment, a direct message on Instagram or Twitter, a response to my website, Ask Candace section, or even just a comment or a rating on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Like, I just really, really appreciate it. And every day when I get down, I think about this podcast. I think about you guys, and I think about where you are in the world and how awesome that is that we're able to connect through my phone and the internet connection. And these apps, like I'm able to connect with people in Italy and France, in the UK, in just all over Hawaii, China, Russia. Russia's been climbing the charts of who's been listening to me, which is awesome. I don't know how they're doing it, but they're doing it. So you name any region or country, I've hit it. I've hit most of the countries in the world as far as like where I've gotten a download from. And I'm just so grateful. Helsinki, Finland. I mean, what the hell? I only know one person who lives in Helsinki and it's Villavalo. What if it was him? What if it was him? Anyways, back to the student loans. Sorry, I got a little sidetracked there. You know, some graduates are paying 2 to 3 times their original loan. I got really lucky. I didn't sign any bank loans or private loans. I signed federal loans that were either subsidized or not subsidized. And then the rest came out of pocket, which wasn't a lot after scholarships. So currently I owe $22,000 and $55 of that balance is towards interest. And I don't know how I got lucky. I don't. I have paid maybe $500 towards that $22,000 balance in the last 7 years. It was almost immediately after I got the bill, after I graduated, to where all of a sudden I didn't have to pay I didn't have to pay for a year. I'm like, all right, cool. I don't even have that much money. I just graduated. See, this is how it started. I just graduated college. I don't have a job with my degree yet. So let me take a time and look. So thank you. Thank you, federal government, for giving me a year to pay, because I don't have a job right now. So it started off with, you're a new graduate with a degree. You don't have a job. You're looking for a job. And then this is what they didn't tell you when you got out of college, is that the odds of you finding an entry-level position that requires no prior experience in the field you graduated in is almost fucking impossible. It's almost like the employers and the HR departments and the recruiters and the hiring managers didn't coordinate with the university presidents and deans and professors and all that. It's like the federal government didn't, you know, do their due diligence and make sure that these two institutions were talking to each other, that the employers and the educators were on the same fucking page, and they weren't. Because when a whole generation got out of fucking college, what did we do when we couldn't find a job in our degree? We worked at Starbucks. We became baristas. We became Uber drivers, Lyft drivers. We became influencers. Call center people, customer service representatives. Like, what? We went to college for that? We got in debt for that? Something we could have done outside of high school? And by the time 4 years have gone by, we could have been a manager. So now you're at a job with people who didn't go to college that are higher than you in position. It was weird. Or you might be the youngest. If you got really lucky with at finding a good job, you are going to be the youngest in your whole team and get picked on. That's what happened to me. I was the youngest on my team at Vanguard. I got fucking bullied. That's another story. I have an episode called Office Politics that you should listen to, where I talk about being bullied in the office setting, what happened to me, what I wish I did, and what should have been done. Anyways, 1 in 4 borrowers of student loan debts default or fall behind within 5 years. I don't know what happened, like, down to the terminology. I don't know exactly what's going on with my student loans, and that's a problem. Because my student loan debt has been sold off from one institution to another institution to another institution, maybe 6 or 7 times in the past 7 years. I'll get an email or I'll get a letter saying, hey, we're the new servicer for your student loan repayments, so make an account. And then I'll check with the government. And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, I haven't paid it in a year. Keep in mind. Oh, you don't got to pay for another year. And I'm just like, what? So years have gone by where it was like, I had no bill in the mail. There was nothing coming to me. Nothing was reported to my credit. Nothing to Experian, nothing to TransUnion, nothing to Equifax. Nothing was reported as paused or delinquent. Nothing. I just had the balance there showing on my credit report. And to this day, nothing has affected my credit from student loans. And I don't know how I got so fucking lucky. I don't know. I've been given 8 years of grace period. Hold on. 7 years of a grace period to pay back my loans. And it's funny. Down to the wire, I finally got a job in the court system using my degree after 7 years. After 7 years, I worked in customer service settings. And then I finally got out of customer service and into real office jobs in finance, where I didn't talk to clients, where I was just doing work on behalf of the hedge fund and the financial institutions. And finally, after doing that for 5 years, I'm finally trusted to work for the county. That's what I went to school for. And my new due date is August 30th, 2025. I don't know how much they're going to require me to pay. I just know that I need to pay. Because Donald Trump, as you guys know, out of all the mandates he's been signing, one of them was for student loan forbearance to end and for us to start paying our shit back. So this started May 5th, where he was going to promise that wages were going to be garnished, Social Security was going to be taken away, and tax refunds were going to be taken to pay back our student loan balance, our student loan debt. And I don't know about you, but no one's garnishing my wages. No one is taking my tax returns. Okay? And no one's taking my Social Security. I'm not sure if I'll be able to have Social Security by the time I'm 67. But damn it, I looked at my statement and I get a good amount when I'm 67. So I want to protect that amount of money that's for my Social Security. So no one's taking that. So what am I going to do, you guys? I'm going to pay back my debt, my student loan debt. And I encourage you, no matter how much it is, to look for options in paying it back and also make the commitment and surrender to paying it back. Because although we were 18, 17, although we were financially illiterate, our parents were financially illiterate, not to any fault of our own, maybe it was generations of poverty that finally caught up. And when you were the one to break the curse, it's like you didn't have the knowledge because your ancestors didn't have the knowledge. Your parents, your grandparents, nobody. And it's okay. But now we're stuck with the bill. And we need to move forward in life. So let's just move it out the way. Let's just move it out the way. You know, $250 a week for a year. That's like 10 grand, 10, 12 grand. You can do it. You can do it. Some tips that I can offer to pay off your loans is to make room to spend less in other areas. For example, if you are spending a lot of money on groceries and food, say goodbye to Uber Eats, DoorDash, none of that. Klarna, Affirm, Amazon, for a year, just say no. You know, with all these tariffs and shit, you know, it's probably not that hard to say no these days to ordering online. By the way, we got our tariffs lowered from both sides because Trump and Xi Jinping, our daddy in China, have agreed to a 90-day pause of the trade war. So I believe our trade, our tariff went from 125% to 10%. And I believe on China, they impose tariffs, I think like 5%, or it could be 10%. But it's only for 90 days. So yeah, I know we had an episode about that, so I just wanted to mention that. We need to pay back our debt, our student loan debt. And I'm talking to all 43 million of us. Some of us could qualify for student loan forgiveness. But if you go through the federal government to ask for student loan forgiveness, just keep in mind they have a 98% rejection rate. So go through your job. Do you work in public service? Are you a veteran? Are you a teacher? Did you go to school for that? Ask your HR department or look through your benefits package. See if it's something you could sign up for within a year or if you even qualify for your job to pay back your student loans because you work for public service. That's what happened with my mom. And as I went through my new job benefits package, that's what they offer. So I encourage you to look into that. Even if you don't work public service, see if it could be done by, you know, like your income. Or maybe you can agree to pay a certain amount for 1 to 5 years and it could be the rest can be forgiven. Look for options. Can you refinance it? Do you have a better credit score now? Can you get your credit up and then refinance the loan that you have? You know, when you call and make a payment or when you make a payment online, why don't you call and make a payment towards the principal balance? That way you're not just paying interest. When you get the principal balance down, the interest automatically goes down with it. That's a little tip. And be nice to people on the phone. You never know what tips and tricks or what access they have to eliminating fees off your account or allowing you to do certain things on your account. Like, don't underestimate the power of being nice over the phone. I promise you. I promise you. I used to be that person on the phone that people yelled at. And I have the power to refund. I have the power to issue credits. I have the power to issue discount codes. It all depended on how you acted on the phone. So I also could extend payment due dates for certain people, for certain situations, if they were nice on the phone and had manners. So that is a tip. That's a life tip for you. So it's funny because nearly 1 in 3 borrowers didn't know that payments resumed in 2023. I didn't even know that. Like I said, I have been getting extensions for paying my student loans years at a time. So I didn't know that in 2023, we had to start repaying them again. I probably got another extension because now my deadline is August 30th, 2025. And I didn't ask for that. I think that was put there because of Trump's order for repayment. And I have a feeling that the Democrats are going to cook something up and make it pass through Congress or whoever it needs to pass so that I don't have to pay. People like me don't have to pay for another year. But like, I feel enabled to not pay back my loan. And that's wrong. And I want to show you a video so you can listen to it about a mother's opinion. She sent her daughter to college, in my opinion, quote unquote, the better way than I was sent. Because this mother in particular, she has financial literacy that she was able to pass on to her daughter. So go ahead and listen to this. This is not everyone's experience as she portrays it to be. She tends to generalize in this video that we all have the same start, which is not true. Some of us, like I said, grew up in poverty or our parents are from poverty and there's a lack of financial literacy. So I want you to listen to this woman who is coming from a place of privilege. Just keep that in mind.
And she would call me and say, Mom, my friends are getting credit cards and they're taking out loans. And I told her, because she was only 18, and you know when you're 18, you don't know anything. That's what you guys are trying to say. And I told her, as her parent, don't you dare take a credit card and don't you dare take out a loan. And let me tell you why. And we had a whole little conversation about loan repayment and FICO scores. So I don't want to hear that when you were 18, someone forced you to go to college and then made you take out a loan, because a lot of y'all are hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, not from a 4-year college stint. It's because you went back to college as an adult when you had, you know, when you knew what you were doing, because apparently when you were 18, no one told you what a loan was, even though you signed for it. Stop. Take accountability. No one cares that you have bills to pay and all these things. If you had a mortgage right now, you couldn't say, I'm not paying it. And then I heard people say, well, a mortgage and an auto loan is not the same. I do agree that those student loans were predatory, 100%. They were at the campuses throwing Amex cards at these kids. But that doesn't give you an excuse for not paying your bills and not paying your loan back. Loans are not free money. Who did you think was going to pay it in the event you couldn't? Like, I don't understand why there's so much discourse around these loan repayments. You took out the loan and you have to pay it back. And short of all of the little workarounds that you guys are saying, oh, I'm just going to have my job pay me in a check and not direct deposit. Figure it all out, because all I'm saying is when you're looking around for workarounds to not pay your debt, that's speaking to your character. And I'm sure you guys don't care. But the lack of accountability that I talk about on this app is wild. And there is one group of people that are the ones making excuses. I didn't know what I was doing. I was only 18. They tell us that we have to go to college. Who's they? I don't understand. You were 18 and you didn't have a parent that you could ask for, like, hey, Mom, hey, Dad. So you were just away in college just taken money and thinking that it was free, pay back your debt, learn a lesson, and maybe teach your kids not to sign contracts that require you to pay back something. No one's coming to your rescue. The excuses, and especially from now, you're adults now, it sounds pretty lame that you're screaming on TikTok about having to pay back a loan you agreed to pay back. Again, loans are not free money. The fact that you were 18 and you didn't know what you were doing is lame because you had parents, I would imagine. There was some adult in your life that you could have asked for counsel around what a loan is. And then y'all went out and took out another one because a whole group of women, my color, want to take out MBAs. They want to talk about how they have an MBA. So you took out another loan. So you got loans and you got degrees in marketing. Were you going to work in marketing? You have like degrees in criminal justice. That was the hot one back in the day. Do you work in criminal justice? So now because you don't work in the field that you got a degree in, not only are you mad because you don't work in that field, because you only picked that field because that was the hot trending thing. Now you're mad because you got to pay the money back. My daughter wanted to be a forensic scientist because of the whole OJ thing and the glove don't fit. She was fascinated by it. And she's like, Mom, I'm going to go to college and be a forensic scientist. I'm like, okay, you go get me the newspaper on Sunday because that's where the help wanted section was. And you show me all the jobs that are forensic scientists. She got the paper, not one single job. I'm like, pick a different major. Pick a major that you can use in any environment. She took a major in communications. And she's now in real estate, senior level of a survey company, and she uses her communications. So yeah, you were 18, nobody cares. You're not 18 now. Be responsible and don't teach your children to think that loans are free money. Be an example for once and for all. Let me know down in the comments. Does this resonate with anyone or am I talking crazy?
Let me know in the comments on YouTube, in the comments section on Spotify. Did that resonate with you? Did her message, although tough to hear and coming from a place of financial literacy privilege, do you agree? Some parts that she said, I totally agree with. And it came after days of, of reflection and meditation on what she said. And I think about how Biden on his campaign promised that he would forgive student loan debt. In my eyes, he had one job and that was his job and he didn't do it. He tried. The Supreme Court shot it down and they said it was unconstitutional for the United States government to mandate individuals who didn't go to college or already paid off their student loans to pay off $1.77 trillion of student loan debt. It's funny how they couldn't just cancel it. Because money's electronic, right? There's no money. I don't have $22,000 physical cash and I didn't have it when I signed up for the loans. Once I press yes, or click submit or sign or whatever the fuck, here comes $22,000 on the way to ASU. Money is fiat. The reason why digital currency and like online banking works is because we all believe that the money is there. But in terms of liquidation, if we all went to our individual banks and took out our money, all of us at the same time, the money's not there. There's not enough cash. So signing, when you're 17, 18, and you never had a credit card, you never had a ding on your credit, you don't know what credit is, you don't have credit. It's like, all of a sudden, you get a loan for an amount of money that someone years down the road who's not going to college has to prove themselves through their credit history to get that type of amount of loan for anything. For a car, for a refinance on another loan, for a mortgage. Like the due diligence that the financial institutions do before they give out loans that aren't student loans Oh, it's invasive. And most times they deny you for the dumbest things. Like if you haven't lived at your address for 2 years and you want to apply for a loan upwards of $10,000 to $20,000, like maybe it's a business loan. Maybe you fell behind on hospital payments. You have to prove yourself through your credit score, which should be 750 plus if you're asking for that type of loan, especially if you want a low interest. Why are they not providing that due diligence for 17-year-olds and 18-year-olds? Why? Why do they want to fuck us so bad to make us dependent on them for the rest of our lives? I'm not dependent on the federal government, so I don't know what the purpose was for having such high costs for education in the first place, requiring people who are average income earners, who come from parents who came from poverty, that beat the odds, that maybe we're not as rich. And like the 1% of wealth that is accumulated to less than 1% of the population of the U.S., it's crazy, that wealth divide. You really see it when you get to college. Because when I was in college in 2013 to 2017, when I set my foot in my dorm, I realized that people from the East Coast, especially the Northeast, like Maine, Connecticut, Vermont, New York, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, they had money. They had money. I mean, I was jealous because my mom was bankrupt. She didn't have money my whole college years. So, like, she had to take a loan out for me to be in the dorm and to buy me clothes for college. And it wasn't like I relied on loans to pay for my lifestyle. A lot of people did that. Like, they took out federal loans for school and then they took out personal loans for their lifestyle, like apartment, credit card, car, everything. They took out loans. And I didn't know people were doing that. I just thought everyone had rich parents. So here I am, like, my tuition's paid through loans and scholarships, and my dorm room stay is paid through scholarships. I mean, through loans. But I didn't have money to hang out with my friends. I barely had money for books. Like, I was always finding, like, illegal downloads of the textbook, or I was borrowing links or whatever. I was on Quizlet a lot. Shout out to Quizlet. My mom would give me all she could. Sometimes that was $20. Sometimes it was $70. Sometimes it was nothing. I had to go to school without living near campus for a while, for about a year. I would take a 2-hour bus ride just to get to class and a 2-hour bus ride to get home. I would do that 4 times a week. So 8 trips, like 16 hours on the bus. And then my mom got off her bankruptcy, you know, after I graduated college and I was able to get a car, because she got me a car, which was nice of her. But during college, I struggled. And I didn't know that I could. I'm glad I didn't know, because I didn't know that I was able to take out loans, that these institutions were going to give me loans because I was in college to live off of. Like, if I had that knowledge, I'd be in so much debt right now. I'd be in hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, because when I was in college, I wanted to keep up with the Joneses so bad, but I couldn't. Because the money that I did work through college, I worked full time in the summer, and I worked part-time during the semester. But I was a waitress all throughout, from sophomore year to senior year. I was a waitress. And in the summers, I would save all my money for rent to live across campus because I didn't have a car. So everything I did was really strategic to keep me in close proximity to college and to keep me enrolled in college. I sold drugs after I spent all the money I saved from being a server. I sold drugs. Am I proud of it? No, but it kept the roof over my head. It kept the books being bought each semester, and it kept me clothed and, you know, with hygiene, everything. I wasn't living a lavish lifestyle because I sold drugs. I was able to live the bare minimum because I sold drugs and worked part-time. Which, when you're working part-time as a student, they only want you for a season or they don't want you at all. And they'll pay you $7.35 an hour. I'm not joking. That's why the incentive to be a waitress was high, because you can get a certain amount of tips even though you're getting paid $2 an hour. I always made more money as a waitress than an hourly employee making minimum wage on part-time. So, not all of us have the luxury or even the capacity, the brain capacity to work a job and go to college. Some people just straight up didn't want to work a job and go to college and just took out loans. And for those people, I don't feel bad for them. Because if you're going to live off debt, I mean, live off of it. Like, my debt went towards my tuition. Does that make sense? I didn't live off of it. Some people lived off of their loans. They bought a car or they paid for their car payments. They got the fan, because there's a lot of fancy apartments going up. We were targeted. My class of 2017, we were targeted. Uber was the first company to come onto ASU campus and ask for brand ambassadors when they were nobody. So me and my friends were using Uber for the lack of a domestic driver, a non-drunk driver, or someone who wasn't drinking. What do they call them? A DD? Designated driver. We were the ones that turned Uber into your designated driver. That's how it got really popular. It was college kids. My generation didn't deal with, like, deaths from DUIs or anything like that because we had Uber before it was launched all over the world. It was just a testing app in ASU. We were the tests. We were the people being tested on. So it worked. I have no big check from that. Some of my friends were, like, Uber ambassadors with discount codes, free rides, all that. They didn't. And now that we made, because we made Uber what it was, and we don't have the money to show that, which is really sad. I feel robbed. Especially, I was banned from Uber for, like, ever until this year. So fuck them. But fuck Lyft too. I like Uber better, but it still sucks because it costs a lot. Anyways, I digress. I'm glad I didn't live off loans. Even though I wanted to keep up with the Joneses so bad. Because I was so jealous of girls my age or a year older who had designer purses. I just bought my first designer purse. I got it the other day. It's a Coach purse. Even though I said some words about Coach, the type of purse that I bought, I mean, if the same style in Louis Vuitton would cost me $5,000, I still get real leather quality from Coach, but I only paid like 95% less than a Louis Vuitton purse of the same style. And I feel good about it, you know? I have a designer bag. It counts. It does count. It's real leather. And I got it from Nordstrom. I have a Nordstrom card. Anyways. This type of debt, student loan debt, it seems unfair because we were so young when it was presented to us. And there was this message of you got to go to college or else you won't have a successful life. And even though you don't have all the money, you can sign a loan and then pay it off once you get a job. You're going to get a job once you graduate. You will get a job. I wish my brain was fully developed when I signed these loans. How about that? I wish my brain was developed. I wish I had the, because when your frontal lobe develops, you can plan ahead in the future. So when you're 17 and 18 and you don't have the ability to plan ahead, you're like, oh yeah, I'm going to pay this off. Oh yeah, I'll get a job for sure. No, because as an adult, it sucks, but you learn to expect the unexpected. You learn to have hope, but to prepare for the worst every single time because you can't afford to have a loss, you know? It's part of being an adult. It's what you learn. But when you're 17 to 18 and you don't have that brain capacity why are we given $20,000 to upwards of $200,000 in loan money and credit card limits in our name without our parents co-signing? Why? You know, I wrote the three credit bureaus because I had a lot of dings in my... I didn't know how credit cards worked. And Chase gave me my first credit card without a job. So I didn't know that you had to pay off the balance before the interest hit. But if interest hit, it was going to be the percentage based off the balance that you signed up for. So if you signed up for like a 24% APR, any balance that you carry over 30 days will have a 34% or 28%, whatever percentage you agreed to added on top of the cost for your monthly bill, and the interest won't stop doing that math until your balance is zero. Nobody told me that. Nobody told me that credit cards were to be used for points and perks. Nobody told me that. I had to learn all that the hard way. So my credit report reflects all that lack of knowledge and ignorance and just not paying my bill because I couldn't, or because I couldn't remember to pay on time. There was a point where I couldn't remember to pay on time because of my ADHD. But once I got that treated, it was like, okay, if I missed a payment, it was because I didn't have the money, not because I was stupid. But, you know, I take accountability. I wasn't the best at managing money up until now. But I had a credit card limit of $5,500 and I had no job. Why was that given to me at 18? And now I'm banned from Chase because I sold drugs and deposited the money in my Chase account. But like, come on. You know that video of that woman going in on us? Because she was talking to us millennials who have student loan debt. Although she was talking from a place of privilege, because the way she was talking to us, I could tell she assumed that we all had access to a parent that was financially literate, like our whole lives, or that we had access to an adult that would give us this knowledge. And she's underestimating the message that was given to us by our parents, peers, school, and society, our teachers, our leaders, that college was a necessary prerequisite to a good life, a successful life, to money, to a job with a vacation, like all the good stuff that we strive for in our careers. All of that was dependent on a college degree, which was dependent on student loans. I heard a rumor that the reason why student cost of tuition is so high is it could be tied all the way back to Ronald Reagan. I think I'm going to do a deep dive on Reagan's policies and how they affect us today. Because I hear a lot of negative talk about Ronald Reagan. I can't put my finger on exactly what people are being negative about, but there's this sentiment online that like people hate him and like think he's evil when it comes to the effects that we're dealing with based on his policies that were set a long time ago. I think he was right before George Bush Sr., I think. Or Clinton, I'm not sure. And I don't have an assistant to look that up for me. And I don't care to. Oh, I had to breathe after all that. Sorry. I really missed you guys. I took a 3-week break because I just felt like I needed it. Wasn't like I was losing passion or losing ideas. I mean, I felt that way like a couple months ago, but I felt discouraged in my podcast because for those of you who don't know, I switched platforms to distribute the episodes and like my download count looks different because it's only coming from Spotify. Spotify is my main distributor now. It used to be RSS.com that pulled data from so many sources. So it looks like my downloads have been decreased by 75%. But once I look at the YouTube downloads for a certain month. And in the same month, I go on RSS.com and count those downloads. Then I go on Apple.com and count those downloads for the same month. Then I go on Spotify and count Spotify downloads. And I did the math. I'm averaging over 1,200 downloads a month since the beginning of the podcast. So although I don't have the correct data, I'm not going to be discouraged moving forward. And that's something that was starting to happen because I wasn't seeing the numbers that I was used to. But I had to check myself, remind myself that I'm great, that I have people who love listening to my podcast and come back and even follow the podcast online, and people who care, people who give a shit, people who benefit from what I have to say. Like, that's so precious to me. And it's almost like I had to take a break to realize how precious this podcast and how precious my audience is and how much it means to me. And it's something that I'm good at. You guys, in my life, I have started a lot of things, a lot of projects, a lot of businesses that never came into fruition. There's a lot of things that I left on the table and never looked at again. There's a lot of things that I started and wasn't consistent with, even though I really wanted whatever outcome it was going to bring. This is the only thing that I've committed to and I've stayed consistent with, despite being in the psych ward, despite losing my job, despite losing everything, like despite looking dumb and looking crazy, sounding crazy, despite losing friends over the damn podcast, like, and even getting threatened by a lawsuit, which is something that I think marks a successful podcast, if you're being threatened a lawsuit, which I was threatened with a lawsuit, but they talked to their attorneys and their attorneys told them to just let it go. So shout out to their attorney. I say all that to say I love you guys. I'm pretty much done with the student loan section of this podcast. I just want to say that despite what that lady said in her video, we're not wrong in the way we feel cheated about student loans. But one thing we have to do, even though it sucks, is to pay it back. And do your due diligence and looking for programs on how to be forgiven the whole amount or part of the amount. Anything will help. See if your job benefits include tuition reimbursement. Anything's going to help you. Start paying them back. I'm going to start paying them back. Right now, I can only budget $300 a month. And I know I said only, but I have other things to cover. And, you know, I feel blessed that I'm able to give that amount right now. But once I got a couple things out of the way, I could give upwards of $1,300 a month. Thank God. If you are unemployed, in between jobs, and finances are tough, and you don't know how your bills are going to get paid, I want you to pray. I'm going to pray for you. In Jesus' name, I pray that you show yourself to whoever's listening and is dealing with financial hardship during a time of unemployment, job insecurity, contracts ending, whatever it is that's preventing income. I pray for a way in Jesus' name. Amen? Amen. I don't normally pray for people publicly. I don't do that. But I remember in 2023 where I was in a season of waiting and it took me 6 months to get hired. And I was on unemployment. I couldn't pay my car. My car was about to get towed. Like, I couldn't do anything. I was behind on a lot of bills. My credit got down to 530 because I wasn't paying bills. But, you know, I held on to my faith and I prayed and I prayed and I prayed. And then finally, it was like I got all the answers that I needed in one job. It was the highest job. It was the highest amount of money I was ever paid in a job. My new job doesn't even pay that much. My contract was extended 6 months than what I signed up for, than what I planned for. So that was a blessing. I was able to move out of my mom's for good. That was a blessing. I was able to raise my credit score 120 points and get new credit cards and have fun racking up points because now I know how to play the credit card game. That's fun. I get to plan vacations. I'm so blessed, and I wish that for you. If you are unemployed, underemployed, you got job insecurity, or you are in between jobs, or if you are in a bad financial situation right now, the prayer was for you, and it was sincere and signed in Jesus' name, so it's gonna happen for you. Just have faith. Sometimes faith is just saying, okay, and thinking about something else. Think about the weather. It's getting hot. Summer's around the corner. Who has their summer body ready? I know I do. I've been exercising 2 hours a day on the fucking treadmill, burning 500 to 700 calories, walking 7 to 10 miles a day. Like, I feel like Superwoman. And I did it through my period. So now I'm like losing weight like crazy, all this water weight. And like my body composition looks different. Plus I'm still on Ozempic. Like, I'm headed towards a size 4. I've never been a size 4. So, a couple things before I let you go. We did a whole episode on Diddy's arrest and we read his charges. Since that episode, his lawyer at the time, who in the past represented Osama bin Laden, he quit. He quit like maybe a month ago. And his trial started on Monday this week. And I believe that they are done with jury selection because since Monday they were going through jury selection, eliminating jurors based off like their history, their criminal history, what they know about the case, how they feel about sexual assault, if they've been sexually assaulted. It's going to be very hard, or it has been very hard, very difficult to find a jury of Diddy's peers who don't know what's going on, who haven't seen the video of him beating up Cassie, who never heard of Diddy ever. Puff Daddy, whatever the fuck you want to call him. And it's like, there's rumors that the jurors that's been selected are being followed and harassed. Like, who's doing this on behalf of Diddy when all the calls from prison are being screened? Like, who's being paid off here? Are the guards being paid off? I don't fucking know, but like, this shit goes deep. His lawyers currently, one of them is a sexual assault survivor, and she's a woman, like she's a black woman. She looks black. She could be something else, like Ethiopian or Indian or something. But she's a woman who has a history of sexual assault. Like, she's a victim of sexual or survivor of sexual assault, I should say. And she's offending Diddy. I mean, as a wannabe lawyer, like, I kind of get it. But as a person, I'm just like, okay. Now I can see why some people don't like lawyers. He has a team of lawyers now instead of that one lawyer who represented Osama bin Laden. In my opinion, more evidence came out. And that guy was like, I'm not going up against these big celebrities. Because I'm sure some of the biggest celebrities are going to be called to witness or are going to be accused of something or are going to be found in videos or photos, but going to be found within some evidence. And it's going to ruin their reputation. Jamie Foxx and the guy from Hustle and Flow, what's his name, Terrence Howard, have already jumped on the narrative, the possible narrative that they were involved with Diddy and his freak-offs by saying that Diddy poisoned them and that Diddy wanted to have sex with them. So now they're jumping on the bandwagon on the narrative. Like, they're jumping the gun on the narrative before it eventually comes out, in my opinion. Michael Myers, the guy from Austin Powers and Cat in the Hat, he's listed in the lawsuit, we don't know for what reason, which is scary. Michael B. Jordan, the guy from the latest movie Sinners, that's really popular, he's mentioned. Cassie, the whistleblower on this whole thing, we have to owe our respects. We owe our respects to Cassie for this whole thing being exposed. Right now, she is testifying on the stand as a witness, despite the NDAs, despite being threatened with her life. I'm sure her family and her husband have just two kids, and she's pregnant with her third. She's currently testifying as a witness, pregnant. She's very pregnant. She's not like 1 or 2 months. She's obviously about to pop. She's testifying and she's crying. Even a picture of her, a real picture, which is not supposed to be released because it's a federal case and they're using sketch artists to sketch every scene, but she's crying really, really hard. And some of her testimony, it includes some of the sickest shit I've ever heard. Let me just share with you some of the shit. He would make Cassie look for prostitutes, male prostitutes, maybe even female prostitutes, on Backpage and Craigslist. Back when Backpage and Craigslist had ads from escorts and from sex workers, she would set it up. And unbeknownst to them, it's like, oh, it's Diddy. But like once they find out it's Diddy and Cassie, like there's money involved. And Diddy's label companies paid these escorts. And that's where the racketeering and the RICO charges are coming through. The sex traffic charges come from him trafficking Cassie and other escorts across country and state lines to have freak-offs. Freak-offs were very often and lasted from 36 to 96 hours. So 3 to 4 days. 2.5 to 3 to 4 days a freak-off would last. She was drugged. And I believe she became an addict through him constantly drugging her through baby oil, through making her pop pills, through... Because he introduced her to ecstasy. She said she popped a blue dolphin the first time they had sex. And like, a blue dolphin is an ecstasy press pill. This is when ecstasy was ecstasy. Now it's just crack and caffeine. He made her collect the ejaculated sperm from the escorts and rub the sperm on his nipples. I'm talking about Diddy. He made her rub cum on his nipples. This is a new level of cuckold. This is a new level of, the lawyers are trying to say he's a swinger. Just say he's a cuck. You probably have a better chance of getting off if he just argues that, hey, I'm a cuck. I'm a loser that likes to watch people have sex and drink the cum from the man when it's over. That's what cucks do. I watch a lot of porn. Okay, this is what he was doing. He was recording all of it. He is gay. He is DL. Because a symptom of DL men, they abuse women. Oh, yeah. That is a common trait of down low men, they abuse women. So I'm not surprised that all this sexual, homosexual activity, alleged, blah, 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 Justin Bieber on a mental breakdown because allegedly he was raped by Diddy or touched by Diddy or Usher, and it's gonna come out and he's nervous now. It's a whole mess in Hollywood. It's a whole fucking mess. You know, I wish Cassie nothing but strength and love, and I just want to recognize that she is so brave, and that Diddy's victims, they owe her their respect. Because if it wasn't for her, like, it could have been, like, Carisha or I'll Be Sure or even Diddy's stepson. But it wouldn't have carried as much merit or weight as Cassie's, because Cassie was right next to Diddy for 10 years. And we wondered, as a generation, where's her album? Where's her follow-up single to her two hit songs? Me and You and the other one, Long Way to Go. Where's her third single? Where's her album? Where's her tour? And by the grace of God and her current husband, she's out of that situation and she's strong enough. She had to go to rehab because she was addicted to everything. He gave her everything. She's so beautiful. And that's such a, I'll be rotten in hell for that, because dealing with addiction, it knows no bounds. It doesn't care if you're beautiful, if you're a millionaire, it will ruin your life. And he gave that to her. And anyone who's ever preyed upon sober people or people who've never done drugs and you give it to them, knowing how detrimental it is financially, emotionally, mentally, physically, go to hell. Go to hell. I can only imagine how addicted she was and how dependent she was to get through the freak-offs. I would be popping ecstasy too. I'd be doing cocaine too. He said, or she said, that she had so many sores in her mouth at one point, she couldn't perform. And they asked her, why do you have sores in your mouth? She's like, because I had so much dick in my mouth, so much different dick in my mouth that I had sores. I believe she has something, either HPV or oral herpes. That's just my assumption based off that testimony of what she said. The whole rubbing semen on his nipples. She had to have her nails French tip or white at all times because it stood out when she was having sex with other people. She would have sex with women, be forced to have sex with women. She would did he have men pee in her mouth a lot? And that's just disgusting. It's just disgusting. And I look at Carisha, his ex-girlfriend or whatever the fuck she is to him from City Girls, how, remember a couple years ago, she was like, oh, I like golden showers. I like golden showers. Now I wonder if she was beat or if she was complicit in all this, or she acted, or she played a dominant role in the freak-off. See, to me, Cassie wasn't treated as a partner or equal or someone who was dominant in Diddy's role. But Carisha, she's very sexual. She's from the City Girl. She's very sexual. Her music is very graphic. She encourages prostitution among young women. I don't care if you call it sugar daddy, sugar baby trick, or whatever. It's prostitution. When you're getting purses and money from men you sleep with, for men you call ancient niggas and blah, 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 it's prostitution. It's not tricking. It's called prostitution. So she promotes prostitution. And there have been rumors that she forced a male individual to give her cousin fellatio or head. And, like, there's just all this speculation that she's, like, a madam or, like, you know, she distanced herself from Diddy once Cassie came out. But I wonder if she's involved with any illegal activity after Cassie broke up with Diddy, or after Cassie got away from Diddy, I should say. She was probably, like, I don't see Carisha as a victim in this situation. I see her as an accomplice, to be honest. But, like, I haven't seen her with Diddy. Her podcast, you know, Carisha Please, who it was produced by Diddy, I don't know where that's at. You know, I'm wondering if any victims will come out saying Carisha and Diddy both did this to me or had this done to me, or Carisha was set it up. I don't know. I think Carisha was Cassie's replacement. But instead of Diddy having to abuse Carisha, Carisha was already a participating volunteer for all the freak-off festivities. You can tell from her music. And you can tell from her image and how she carries herself that she's all about sex and money for sex. He probably didn't have to beat her or tell her more than one time to obey. Because I'm sure those freak-offs didn't stop when Cassie got away. I'm sure they continued and she was replaced. I have not heard Carisha. Because, like, any time between now and the last year would have been a good time to come out and say, hey, I'm a victim, too. He beat me, too. I had to set up freak-offs, too. But none of that. So I look at her weird. This trial is going to be the trial of the decade. But something else is brewing that could take Diddy's trial's place in the trial of the decade. And that's Tory Lanez's case with Megan Thee Stallion and Kelsey. I think her name's Kelsey Williams, but I could be wrong about her last name. Her name's Kelsey, though. Although Tory Lanez is convicted of attempted murder, I think it's attempted murder or a lesser charge, but he's spending 10 years behind prison. Yesterday or 2 days ago, he was stabbed in prison and was rushed to the hospital outside of prison. So it was pretty serious that if you are like an inmate and you get hurt, like you either have to be giving birth or about to die to go to a hospital outside of prison, or else they'll just patch you up, give you a Tylenol if you have enough on your books for the Tylenol and just send you on your way. He was stabbed. I don't know why he was stabbed. He could have rubbed someone the wrong way. It could have been a shot call based off Megan's crew, whether it was her family or her professional team, if that was the case. But it got me thinking, did he shoot her? Did he really shoot her? And then it got me thinking, does she know, Megan? Does Megan really, 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 really know 100% who shot her? Her credibility is already out the window because she lied about sleeping with Tori. Because Kelsey also slept with Tori. I don't know about you, but I'm pretty privy to whoever's sleeping with my man, whoever's sleeping with who I like, or whoever's sleeping with who I slept with. The woman's intuition is that strong. But I'm not saying, I'm not counting on intuition here. I'm just saying that I think it was pretty obvious to Kelsey that Meg and her were sleeping with the same men. Whether that was Tori, whether that was like Tori smashed Kelsey and then Megan like immediately after, or he smashed Megan last year and smashed Kelsey last year and Megan recently. But basically, Megan Thee Stallion, she didn't disclose who shot her the night she was shot. She didn't disclose it to police, and she didn't disclose it to the hospital. Which tells me, well, she said in testimony that she wanted to protect the black man against police violence, potential police violence. She was looking out for all of them because they were black and the police were there. So she didn't know how to act, or she didn't want to make accusations because they were black and how black people are treated in the system. She said that. And then she didn't mention Tori when she was being bandaged up or when she was being interrogated that night. They asked her, like, who shot you? She's like, I don't know. I was shot, though. And then it came down to the evidence. Okay, well, who has gun residue on them? Kelsey had gun residue on her. Well, whose fingerprints are on the gun? Kelsey? Tori? They're both in the gun. But who has motive to shoot Meg? Who has that type of anger? If one of these motherfuckers is supposed to be her best friend and the other guy is supposed to be a peer in the hip-hop industry, and you got security, who in my opinion should be neutral, it's my humble opinion that there's a possibility that Kelsey shot Meg. And the reason why Tori's in jail is because Meg doesn't know who shot her. And Kelsey does. I think Tori initially wanted to take the blame for Kelsey, because I think in his mind, he thought that he would never get convicted because the lack of evidence. But it didn't work out that way. She pleaded the fifth, Kelsey, right after she said she was going to testify. And right before she was going to testify, she suddenly pleaded the fifth. And everything changed. Megan got on the stand. Tory Lanez got convicted. I don't believe she knows who shot her because she was drunk. Think about it. That live, she was, I saw it. That live, she was in Kylie Jenner's pool with Kylie Jenner and Tory Lanez, and Kylie Jenner was trying to get out of the camera because for whatever reason, she probably didn't want to be seen with hip-hop artists on Instagram Live like that, or she probably felt like she didn't look presentable. But I remember that live because Megan was wearing gold Louis Vuitton hoop earrings, and I have the same earrings. And I was like, oh, we have the same earrings. So that's why I remember that video. She was drunk. And this was like her first big year. You know, she had that song with Beyonce, Savage Remix, and like, you know, her mixtapes were popping. Like, everything was popping. This was before the Nicki Minaj, Bigfoot beef and all that. But that night she was really, really drunk. And it wasn't any different from any other night. I understand she lost most of her family, but I'm not saying she is a heavy drinker because of that. I'm just saying it's a possibility that she was dealing with the deaths of her mother, her grandma, and I think her dad or her uncle. But a lot of people died in her family recently in the past like 10 years. And she's so young and she's successful and still dealing with that loss. I feel like she drank as part of her coping mechanism because she drank a lot. I mean, she was like shoving Hennessy down people's throats. Like, her music was about getting drunk, staying faded. Like, she was on live and like performances and interviews. She was drunk. So, that's just my opinion. Take it or leave it, but I do have a degree in criminal justice. So, maybe instead of a grain of salt, take it with a tablespoon of salt. What I said. And it's going to be very interesting with both cases. Even though one case is concluded, his conviction may be overturned with new evidence, if there is new evidence. But I feel like his lawyers that spoke on TMZ today, I saw, they are challenging the evidence that he was convicted on already. So I think the case might be reopened. It depends on the judge and it depends on the evidence. And it depends on the lawyers, his current lawyer's interpretation of the evidence that he was convicted on. But I feel it was Kelsey. That's just my opinion. It's my humble opinion. Either way, Megan Thee Stallion doesn't deserve being shot. Okay? And if it turns out it was Kelsey, Megan doesn't deserve to be held accountable. Because she didn't know. She truly didn't know. I really think she doesn't know either way. She can't say yes or no about Tory, and she can't say yes or no about Kelsey. Because she knows Kelsey has motive. If someone was your best friend in this situation, why would you question your best friend if you were really best friends? There was some shade. There were some issues going on there. And Megan knows she's guilty because she slept with... Like, what if Kelsey really liked Tory? See, to Megan, Tory's just another dick. Why did she sleep with Tory even though he slept with Kelsey? Or was sleeping with Kelsey? Why? Why, Megan? What kind of person are you? I'm not saying you deserve to be shot. But this really... Like, shit like this is how people get shot. Is sleeping with other people's... person, whether it's their husband, their sneaky link, their boyfriend, especially if you're that person's friend, beware if you're going behind their back, no matter what the situation is, no matter who it is, famous or not. This is how people die. Infidelity. Adultery. Infidelity and adultery don't apply to this situation because they're serious words made for like people in marriages, but it just gives you the gravity of the situation, right? Anyways, I digress. This is Candace with the Manic Candace podcast. With over an hour and 19 minutes of content. Man, I had a lot on my chest. So thank you for listening. Please share this episode with your friends, family, and your followers. And I bid you adieu, mes amis. Bye-bye.